And welcome to Say What, where we ask the questions that make us say what? I'm Marianne.
And I'm Cassie.
And today we're interviewing Mr. Rick Bunch about the G10 resolution for World Conference.
First, we have a few getting to know you questions.
Okay.
For do you think you would survive a zombie apocalypse?
Well, I probably would call upon my army of robots that I've created with artificial intelligence, and they would surround me and protect me.
So you're imagining like a futuristic kind of, like you have your own army of robots.
Well, since you're with me, I'd probably ask you to protect me too, so.
So what part of a driver's test do you think you'd most likely fail or do poorly in?
Probably keeping within the speed limit.
Yeah, definitely. I know some people that would definitely fail with that too.
Well, most people probably would say trying to parallel park.
Well, yeah,
Yeah. When I was 16, I didn't have any problem at all with that. So I think the speed limit would be my better answer.
yeah. So a lot of people that would definitely fail with that.
Do you ever like talk to inanimate objects? Like, do you get angry at them and just like have to vent at the inanimate objects?
Well, I think the answer probably to that is yes, but not what you're expecting. Because when I smash my thumb with a hammer, I definitely talk to that hammer, and fortunately, it never answers back.
Honestly, I would be insanely worried. I would be insanely worried if it started to talk back.
Me too. I'm just wondering why a hammer.
Well, I mean, if you smash with the hammer, it's not really the hammer's fault, but you get angry at the hammer,
Right?
so you talk to the hammer.
Okay.
I don't know why I'm explaining this to you. So, if you could have any pet in the world, what would it be and why?
Well, I've tried to give this one some thought. I think it would be a chimpanzee, but not in a cage. Because number one, it looks like me. And number two, it's really good at problem solving. And so I think it
Yeah,
would be a
fair.
good companion in that regard.
Yeah. Well, how you just said the chimpanzee looks like you, even I was
keep
actually.
calling yourself a chimpanzee, Mr. Rick.
No, they look similar to us. Actually, what I like about that answer is most people are answering a normal kind of pet, like a lizard or a dog, but this one's outside of the box, which is why we say any pet in the world. It's thinking outside of the box. I like that answer. So we have a few questions from your bio. For starters, you seem to enjoy nature. What is your favorite thing about being outside in nature?
Well, I think there are two things. I do a lot of nature programs with school groups and so forth. And so I really enjoy talking to the young people about the environment and so forth. But for me personally, I think it's probably walking through a great cathedral beneath the canopy of a giant cottonwood trees. And the chance to think and listen to the voice of the wind whispering through the leaves and the symphony of the birds singing. So it's just being out there and the opportunity to meditate in what I call the cathedral, literally, underneath the canopy of these giant trees. And you probably don't know what a cottonwood tree is, but that's very prominent here in Colorado, along the river
Yeah.
especially.
Oh, you're in Colorado. I've been in that area, and I'm
We have
pretty
some
sure.
cottonwoods down here.
Yeah, I know, but when we go over west, there were more, and remember it was making Evie sneeze.
Those are the ones that get the giant fluff that goes all over the place, right?
Well, it could just as easily be an elm tree, or I mean, elm trees or oak trees, which you would have back in.
So the cottonwoods are the ones that get the fluff that they look like fuzz balls floating in the wind.
Well, they're primarily along the rivers because
Ooh.
they have to have a lot of water.
Yeah, we don't have any rivers. We have ponds.
We have what are those called? Estuaries or whatever. So you spent a lot of time as a youth minister in French Polynesia. Could you tell us about that?
Well, in the first place, my background is in, has been in camping and outdoor education and parks management and so forth, and particularly in those early days in youth ministries, I was on staff of Spectacular for 25 years. I helped create and was a part of the first International Youth Forum, and it happens that in French Polynesia, at the time, all the leaders had been, shall we say, white people, people from Australia, from New Zealand, from Europe, and the United States. And so I was asked to take my family and go to Tahiti to develop leadership there among the native population, indigenous leadership. And so we were able to use camping as the primary venue for teaching the leadership skills that they needed. And what we discovered really was that they had all the skills, they just had to be convinced that they were capable of using them. And so our job basically was to educate ourselves out of a job, to convince them, you know, that they could be the leaders. And fortunately, while we were there, Étienne Fana was ordained a high priest, and he became the first mission center president there for French Polynesia. But we also taught English, and we discovered along the way that the, well, number one, that the young people had to go to school in the French system for 6 years, and then they would have to start passing a series of tests, and if they couldn't pass the tests, then they couldn't go on to school, which meant they were out on the street without an education and couldn't get a job. The other thing is, we discovered that the cultural arts in Tahiti were being lost. Things like pearl shell carving, you're familiar with the shell in Hawaii, they would call them leis, but they're called heis in Tahiti, wood carving. And so we had opportunity to go to the government to ask for a grant to allow us to create a cultural arts school, which would then preserve the cultural arts, but also give young people a chance to make a living, as it were. And fortunately, we got the grant and we built the school. And so it went real well for 3 years. And then the government came back to the, by then we were gone. Came back to the mission to ask if they would be willing to take young men who were just getting out of prison who had the same problem, no skills and no education. And so they were allowed to come into the cultural arts school to gain those same skills. Unfortunately, the year after that, a hurricane came through and it blew the school down. And they didn't have money enough to rebuild it, so it didn't go beyond the 4 years. So basically, that's what it was. We were there a little over 2 years, and marvelous experience, and hopefully we made a difference.
Sounds like you did. That sounds really cool. That cultural arts school. That would be honestly a really fun place to go. Could you share some of your experiences directing youth camps in East Africa?
There were 10 of us that went as a group to create camps, youth camps in both Zambia and Kenya. And in the first one in Zambia, that one's a little bit difficult because the population there, by and large, is in poverty. And the 5 years prior to us going there, there had been a severe drought, so food was a real problem. And so we asked the young people to come to the camp, to bring 10 cents, to bring a cup to for eating out of, and to bring a blanket. And the facilities were rather primitive. And we discovered that out of the 52 kids that came to camp, at least half of them couldn't afford the 10 cents. And so we took care of that. The cup was for food. Their food in Zambia, in the outlying areas away from the cities, is of stuff called Nshima. And what it is cornmeal that's been boiled and so forth for 3 meals a day, if they can get it, 365 days a year. That was their menu. And the second day we were in camp, I can guarantee that it got old. But one of the church members there was able to get some chickens on the hoof. They were live. And so they brought 10 chickens to camp. And so we had to slaughter those. And that made a nice, it made nice food in addition to that in Shima. But we discovered also that half the kids came to camp because they heard we were going to have sweet potatoes. And so we were able to have sweet potatoes too, and so that helped a lot. Our primary focus then was to do activities with the campers so that they could have a good time and enjoy each other's company and so forth. And then my specific responsibility in that camp was to lead campfires, which was kind of silly because they're a singing people. And so they led their own campfires in spite of me, and but also to
Nothing.
teach leadership so that hopefully the camps would carry on after we left. The other one was in Kenya, and that was much different because the population there is much more educated, and they're familiar with a lot of things in America. They wanted me to teach them to play baseball, for example, and they're familiar with movies from the U.S. And so that one, we did more of a nature program, because of they got huge hummingbirds there, for example, and then the leadership to hopefully carry on that camp too. But also, this was before your time, but the first International Youth Forum was to have happen in 1992, and so we were able to choose the kids from Africa that would be coming to Graceland for spectacular. And for that first International Youth Forum. So that one was really a good deal too. So we really enjoyed.
I really like helping out with campfires. And I've sung some of the African songs in choir, and I really love the rhythm, and I just think that would be really amazing. I think that was a really amazing opportunity that you had.
Can you imagine in your choir, you're singing these songs that probably are on paper there, but then in the middle of it, you get up and you start dancing around.
Yeah. That is what we did, actually.
Well, the Africans cannot sit still as they sing, and so
No.
during the campfires, we were up singing and dancing and circling around and so forth. And also, are you familiar with the song Kumbaya?
Yes.
Okay, well, that came from Africa, of course. But when I first started that, Kumbaya, my Lord, they didn't want to know part of that because it really came, Kumbaya, my Lord, Kumbaya, Kumbaya, my Lord, Kumbaya. And so it had rhythm. And so I learned a lesson there too.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. So, what do you do as an Earth Stewardship Team Leader?
Well, the Earth Stewardship Committee, which we now call a team, was created back in about 2010, but it wasn't to be necessarily ongoing. So in 2016, World Conference passed a resolution to make the Earth Stewardship Committee a permanent entity, a permanent committee. And so President Steve Vizzi asked me to come and be the first chairman of that group. And the idea was to speak with prophetic voice and to educate our population with reference to earth stewardship. And so I've created an international group. I've got a couple members from Australia. We have one from South Korea and Africa and Latin America. So we're trying to get the feel for what earth stewardship means in populations outside the United States for sure. And then, we've done a lot of talking about fossil fuels and what that's doing to our atmosphere and greenhouse gases and so forth. But what I'm trying to do is, in the education process, convince people that earth stewardship is far larger than just fossil fuels. For example, one of the things that I've done in the last 8 years now is to create study lessons that are available at Harold House, so they're available to the people. There are right now seven lessons, and on climate change, on climate, what it does to poverty, to social justice, clean water, plastics, and the scourge of plastics and the chemicals that are used in plastics, healthy oceans, food issues. And the one I just completed is on deforestation. And all of those are so interconnected, it's hard to separate them out and say, well, climate has nothing to do with food, but that's not true because weather and drought and floods and so forth are creating real food problems in particularly developing countries like some of the countries in Africa and Latin America and so forth. So basically, that's what we've been about, what we've been trying to do. And so that's what this resolution that you wanted me to talk about eventually, that's what that's about, is to try to educate our people in terms of what can be done for issues like food and poverty and racism and so forth, as it deals with earth stewardship. That's probably a longer answer than what you wanted, but that's what it's about, at least.
Fine. So we are getting out of the resolution now. First, we want you to we're asking you to summarize this resolution.
Well, as I mentioned, last conference we passed a resolution that had specifically to do with fossil fuels and the carbon dioxide that's sent into the atmosphere. But as I've said, the Earth stewardship is much broader and includes the fact that that resolution and the resolution that same group is bringing this time too about fossil fuels ignores another gas that's even more dangerous than carbon dioxide, and that's methane. And methane comes actually from natural sources like swamps and so forth, that the plant materials actually release methane into the air also, but also cattle in feedlots, these huge feedlots where we're raising beef to be slaughtered and used for food. But cattle, when they actually belch methane into the atmosphere. And so that's part of the conversation. I guess what I'm really trying to do is to expand the understanding of our people who will be at conference, and if they pass this resolution, then the people across the world, to educate them that there are so many more things that we can do and we need to be aware of. And so hopefully this resolution will at least start to bring some of those things to our attention.
Yeah. I hadn't actually thought about. I knew that the plants in the swamps release the methane, but also the ones in the swamps, like that's part of the natural balance.
Yeah.
But the cattle, the giant concentration of cattle is definitely not.
Well, there's some other things about here that I can talk about a little bit later, but just water. And the U.S. Department of Agriculture estimates that 90% of our fresh water goes to agriculture, feeding livestock. I mean, watering livestock, but also the tremendous amount of water that's needed to raise corn and wheat and things that then we feed to our cattle. And so a lot of that just doesn't make sense. It's just not good stewardship. By the way, I mentioned these cattle and they're belching. There's a group that's doing some research now with a seaweed kelp that's red, and they're able to dry it and grind it and put it in the cattle feed, and they've discovered that they've quit belching methane. Think about that next time you burp after you drink a soda.
So, you mentioned something in the resolution about eco-friendly churches. What would be your suggestions for that?
Well, and that one's a really difficult thing to deal with, and because I said we've got people from outside the United States that were helping us with this, things that are appropriate in the United States and places like Australia, Europe, and so forth may not even be feasible in some of the countries in Africa, and so we've got to be aware of that, and so. It's especially difficult for those outside of North America and Europe and Australia because of lack of resources, lack of equipment. I mean, you can't just go to the store and buy a refrigerator, for example. And so, ice boxes and those kinds of things, they're just not available. And so it means that we're probably going to have to exercise some stewardship as a world church. Because there are some things that can be done in those countries if they had the resources, and so our good stewardship would allow us to share them. But it's just simple things like when we were in Zambia, for example, Sherry Kirkpatrick, who was a vice president at Graceland, and she was head of the nursing program. She was a nurse and a nursing background. And she had gone into those countries a number of years ago to help mothers be able to take care of their infants, their babies, because infant mortality was very high, and particularly in Zambia. And so she was educating them how to take care of them, how to nurse them, and so forth. And one of the things that we discovered when we were there then was their water comes from just a hole in the ground. And they would send a bucket down into the hole on a rope, and they'd draw the water out, and they'd pour that in their jugs, and then they'd just throw the rope on the ground. Well, that was dirty. That got down into the well, in the hole, and so just a simple thing like we built a little hitching post, two posts with a horizontal bar on it. So that they could put the rope over that, and that kept the rope clean. And so it's just simple things like that's appropriate there that we wouldn't even think of here. So we've got to be aware of what is available and what's feasible and how we can do to help to make this part of the resolution appropriate for them.
Right. But like if our church would want to do it, here in say in Florida, if our church wanted to be eco-friendly, what would we do?
Okay, so you say you're in Florida? That,
Correct.
yeah, okay. Well, and there again, the situations with buildings in Florida are completely different than what we have in Colorado because we have some pretty tough winters up in the mountains. But
We
it's
have great,
things
pretty great
like,
store.
well, some churches need to look at their insulation, for example. And is that keeping their building warm and then helping keep it cool? Okay, so it's a simple thing like insulation. But the appliances that we have, and this would be the same in Florida as other places, are they eco-friendly? Or are they wasting a lot of electricity as a result of poor mechanisms within their stoves and so forth? And the same with refrigerators. Okay, so that's part of it. Well, and things, simple things too, like roofing, and could we do solar paneling, for example, to save on electric or to make electricity and so forth? So there are a lot of things like that that could be done across the face of the United States and in places like Australia and Europe and so forth. But we have to be aware too that the needs in a place like in Zambia, where they can build First of all, they built schools before they built churches, and that made sense because education, is really important to them. But just the materials that they use on the side of the building, it has to be materials that they have access to. We can't just cut down a lot of trees just to have lumber to put on the side of a building. So what are the alternatives for things like that? So a lot of things, and that's why I particularly mentioned here, is we need to get together and talk about these things because all of us are smarter than some of us. And so as we pool our knowledge and pool our resources and our ideas, that's part of our stewardship too, is the stewardship of ideas. And so they can decide this will work, that won't work, but it becomes a group effort then.
What would you say, to someone who might be concerned about the costs of these requests?
Well, the resolution in terms of itself, won't cost anything, but it's those things that I just mentioned, that materials and equipment and so forth, that may or may not be available in some places, but not in others. And so that would be a cost that they would have to face. And that's what I'm saying. We need to then make monetary resources available to them so that they can do what they need to do in spite of us.
Yeah, that makes sense. That was a good answer. You also listed a few interesting ideas for educating the body on eco-friendly practices. Could you tell our listeners about some of these ideas?
Well, I mentioned water, for example. In the military, you imagine yourself being on a submarine and having to take a shower because you're in close quarters and everybody starts to smell bad. But water, okay? And so they have an idea of taking shorter showers, that they limit the time you can take a shower. So think how much water that would save if you limited your shower to just 2 minutes. And interestingly enough, in 1988, in Lamoni, Iowa, we had a severe drought. It dried up the lake, it dried up all of our water supply, and so we had to go back to wells that had been dug and so forth. And so you can imagine for spectacular in August of that year, 1,000 high school kids trying to save water. And so we had a real problem that year with spectacular. But anyway, okay, that's one thing. Just simple things like, all right, you go into your shower, you turn it on, you wet yourself down, and then you stand there with the water running while you're doing the soaping and so forth. Just turn the water off while you're soaping, okay? That saves water. So that's one thing. I mentioned that 90% of our fresh water goes to agriculture, which goes to feedlots, which goes to raising corn and so forth. And so one thing we can do is eat less meat. And be careful about eating meat that comes from Brazil, because in that case, the deforestation of the Amazon rainforest to make land that they can use to grow crops and so forth, which McDonald's buys and then brings it up with their hamburger and so forth. So eat less red meat. It happens that it's estimated that at least a third of the food grown in the United States goes to waste. It goes into landfill. It goes into the dump. So don't overcook well, at least preserve your food at that point. The idea that for wood, the deforestation, that we can recycle paper just as a simple matter, and cardboard. The idea that you use, reuse, and recycle is the little mantra that we use to bring that to people's attention at that point. So those are just some of the things, just practically that people can use. And in this in the lesson that I did on deforestation, there are some things at the end there that are suggestions people can use. Every one of those lessons, the seven lessons, have practical suggestions of what they can use. And then I don't know if you're familiar with the fact that I wrote the text for our reunions last year on Heal the Earth. And I was told in the last about the last chapter that people don't like lists. Do this, do that, don't do this, and so forth. And so I said, and I redid that lesson, but I said I'll do it if I can include an appendix. And so there are over 100 suggestions at the end of that text of things that people can use, people can do, and hopefully make a difference for our environment. So I'm rattling on and on and on, but at least that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
I'm a former professor, okay?
Yeah.
And so, give me 50 minutes and I can talk.
And like recycling your own paper, like making your own paper is kind of like actually really fun. So if you look up just how to make paper, make paper out of a bunch of things, like dead leaves. I actually found that you can make paper out of dead leaves, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then even if like if you don't have a tankless water heater, like turning it on and off, turning it off while you're soaping actually saves even hot water, so that makes it so that I'm not getting a cold shower. And we
Well,
use we do we
that's
actually
becoming a
do.
fad now. Take either dipping yourself in an ice cold river and then coming out and taking a hot shower, or just taking a cold shower and then turning the hot water on later to make it a difference. But again, that wastes water.
Amazing. It's like
And by
getting
the
out of
way,
the hot.
other things that people can do, of course, would be to when you buy a new stove or refrigerator for your church or your congregation, to make sure that it's efficient, eco-friendly.
Yeah, and it costs a little bit more, but the fact that you're getting an eco-friendly one is kind of worth it in my opinion.
And by the way, because I've been chairing this Earth Stewardship Team, our city here in Fort Collins have a thing called Interfaith Council, and it's not a regular ministerial association because we have 28 churches that are part of it, but we have almost 50 not-for-profits that are a part of that, and the networking possibilities are just great. And so I've convinced that group, I used to be a vice president of it, that I created a climate and environmental studies group as a part of that Interfaith Council. And so there are a lot of things that can be done if somebody has some imagination.
Yeah. What kind of projects are you talking about in the third to last resolve?
Well, I guess I would start with work days. Our reunion grounds, our campgrounds, like Bluff Springs and so forth there in Florida. So have work days that people can pay attention to things that need to be done, repairs and those kinds of things. So that could be a possibility. Your reunion grounds there, those two, Deland. I've been there a couple times. I did a youth camp and so forth. So strain the lake there and get rid of the alligators would help.
Alligators. That happened one time.
But you could organize workshops and seminars to educate people, which is part of what we're about. What are the possibilities? And that gives an opportunity to talk to each other. But specifically for those workshops and those seminars, invite you people who are younger, young people. But then we need to listen to you because, we're borrowing the atmosphere and borrowing the earth from you. And so you need to have a voice in terms of what's happening, what can happen, and what's important to you. When you do some of these workshops and so forth, invite some of the experts, and there are a lot of people around that can talk to us and educate us and help us do a lot of things that are eco-friendly. But by the same token, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. We don't need to be writing a lot of things because there is a lot of information that's available to us. There are a lot of people that are available to us. And so I would say that would be a good start then. Get together and talk and invite young people to be a part of the conversation.
And Bluff Springs. Seriously though, there was an alligator. It was so cute. It was a tiny one. And with CCM, like we were actually planning on doing a work day and helping to work with the campgrounds, help improve it. So that was actually kind of fun.
We know on work days there are lodgers running around there that were really good at painting, and so just to preserve the wood by putting a coat of paint on it, that's something that can be done.
Small things like that. That's an idea, actually.
Right?
We wouldn't have to keep rebuilding the dock if we just painted it.
Well, I mean, it would help. So, what do you think is most important for people to know about this resolution?
That's a good question. And as I'd suggested, that we're so hung up on fossil fuels that we haven't been able to see the larger picture. And so that I'd start with that Earth stewardship is a larger topic and subject than just fossil fuels. But we've got to talk to each other, and we have to, as I say, develop solutions together. And involve young people. I want the conference to understand, and there will not be very many young people at the conference, okay? And so we've got to convince the adult generations and so forth that we need to involve you. And so that's part of what this is about. And also to recognize, as I've said, and I keep repeating here, but what's appropriate in one place may not be feasible in another. But it's easy to throw up our hands and say it's bigger than what we can do. There's nothing I can do, and we get discouraged. But there are a lot of things that we can do as individuals, and so I want the conference to realize that there are things that we as individuals can do. And it's getting particularly difficult here in the United States with some of the government decisions that have been made to cut out aid, the U.S. aid to developing countries, and that really is a death sentence to a lot of people in some of these countries. Now, I'm not going to be able to say that. I can't get political, but the fact is that I will mention it in passing. That some of those things, and the World Health Organization, withdrawing our funding from that, those are difficult things for people in other countries to understand. And so we have to realize that we've got to be patient with each other, and we've got to talk to each other, and so we've got to do what we can where we can at that point.
Have to do something. So, our last question. If you could have coffee or tea with anyone alive or dead, who would it be and what would you talk about?
If I could talk to somebody alive or dead, huh? I haven't given that much thought, but I think I would like to talk to Mother Teresa. Now,
What
was the
would you
question
talk
was if I could
about?
talk to someone alive or dead? Was that the question? Yeah,
Who
I
would it
would really
be?
like to talk to
Well,
her because, the difficulties that she faced in India, of being considerate, of being compassionate, and so forth. I'd like to figure out how she did it. And day after day after day, being so discouraged or potentially being discouraged, I can feel for that. And so I would really like to talk to her. I'd like to give her a hug.
That's a lovely answer. So, thank you for being willing to talk about this resolution with us, Mr. Rick.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. I mean, it's been an interesting exercise for me.
And thank you all for listening. Remember, you can put suggestions in the comments, and you can find all of our episodes at projectsciencepodcast.org under the Say What series.